We began eating meat a couple of million years ago. But today are told eating meat is bad for us, cruel to animals, and harmful to the environment. And so today we pause to ask, should people stop eating meat?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1053rd edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or, hey, perhaps you're among our friends way up there in Quebec City who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby on the boards. Jason.
Yes, sir.
Do you eat meat?
I do not eat meat.
And why do you not eat meat?
Well, at the age of about 2, when I was conscious enough to kind of realize what was in that Happy Meal at the center of that Happy Sandwich, well, the idea that I was eating a live animal, or what was once a live animal, just kind of didn't really sit well. And ever since then, it just hasn't really been my thing. So I just live a life that doesn't include meat, and that's pretty much simple as that.
Okay, so essentially, you just don't want to eat living animals.
Yeah, that's really what it is. I just feel like I can live without it, so
okay,
that's just my thing. But should other people stop eating meat? I think it's a personal choice. I think everyone should do what's right for them.
Okay, and here's our intern producer, Sarah Rezai, from the University of California. Sarah, do you eat meat?
No, I do not eat meat either.
And why not?
I don't eat meat because of both environmental and health reasons. It really started when I learned a statistic that 80% of our water use goes towards agriculture, and that includes livestock.
Okay, good deal.
But
so it's an environmental, it's harmful to the environment.
Then. Exactly.
Okay, good. Well, folks, I was raised in Montana on a diet of meat, potatoes, and vegetables. Much of the meat my family ate came from my grandparents' farm or from what we hunted down out in the wilds. Nobody in my family, and very few in the city or state of Montana, gave much thought to being omnivorous because, well, there simply wasn't many alternatives out there under the big skies of Montana. But then my brother showed up with a California blonde who happened to be vegetarian. We Olsons were introduced to a new way of thinking about what we ate. Why, we asked. Because, we were told, vegetarianism is better for our health, less cruel to animals, and easier on the environment. Brother's vegetarian diet, which consisted mostly of toasted cheese sandwiches, came and went with a California bond, as did the Olson family's consideration of vegetarianism. But now I am a Californian, and as you have heard, am surrounded, quite literally, by those who are well armed with reasons why I should become a vegetarian when it gets right down to it. And so today I pause to ask, should people stop eating meat? Well, here to help us consider the answer, we have Marta Zaraska, author of Meat Hooked, The History and Science of Our 2.5 Million Year Obsession with Meat. Marta, welcome to the Food Chain. Well,
thank you for having me.
And you're in Dublin, Ireland.
Not exactly in Dublin. I'm in Ireland, but in the countryside. Actually, I'm on a farm right now. I'm staying here. I'm on holidays, and I'm surrounded by cows. Right.
There you go. And they fear not. They need no reason to fear of you, right?
No, not really. Although I think this is just a milk farm mostly, so I don't think they eat them here. I think they're just for milk. But one way or the other, no, they should not be here, that's for sure.
Okay, good. Marta, you are a professional science writer with your works appearing in all kinds of great journals throughout our media landscape. And you are a vegetarian, correct?
Kind of. I mean, I still eat fish from time to time, so this is not exactly vegetarianism. I think it's called pescatarianism. I am trying to be as vegetarian as I can, but I don't live in Ireland. I live in France, actually, and rural France as well. And I have to admit, I find it very difficult not to ever eat fish because basically I would never go out to restaurants again, I think, because there are just no vegetarian options where I live. Unfortunately, I'm not in California. I'm very jealous of people who, you know, have all these amazing options, but where I live, it's just not the way. So,
well, you know, when my brother became vegetarian up in Montana, it was a pretty bleak landscape for what he could eat.
Yeah, I can imagine that as well. So yeah, it's hard, you know, to be one on a diet that's it's different than that of majority of people around you.
Well, you live in France, out in the sticks in a small village, and you have to go through that, don't you?
Yes, that's right. You know, having said, you know, in local restaurants, there are no vegetarian options at all. So, you know, the fish is already considered basically vegetarian. And I once had a vegan visitor who was a strict vegan, and I basically couldn't take her anywhere for lunch. We just ended up walking from one restaurant to another, and in a little town nearby, there are 70 restaurants, and yet we just couldn't find anything that she could eat. You know, even the salads either always had some cheese or sauce based on mayo or eggs, or there was always something. You know?
There was always something in it so a vegan would have a terrible time in the countryside of France, even.
Yeah, that's pretty tough. So Paris is probably much better, but not the countryside.
Well, why did a science writer and a would like to be vegetarian tackle the subject of meat? How did you? What was it that led you to write a book and travel around the world tracking down the story of meat?
So as you've mentioned, I've been a science writer for many, many years now. I'm writing for the Washington Post, Scientific American, among others. And I've always specialized in the topic of nutrition, health, and also environment. You know, meat is where the topics of climate change and environment meet with the topics of nutrition and food and health. So it was obviously something that interested me, and also for personal reasons, because I've been this pescatarian for so many years. I've been always interested in this topic. But at the same time, you know, I've read many, many books written about meat, and there are many amazing books on the topic, you know, about health, meat and environment, and so on. And yet I just couldn't find a book that would answer a question that kept bothering me the whole time. You know, is it so bad for our health, for the environment, you know, and obviously for the animals, no one really likes being eaten. Then you know, why are we doing it? You know, people are really into meat. You know, you ask people, why do they eat meat?
Well, so what is compelling us to eat meat, to continue to eat meat? That's your question. Now, why don't you eat meat, by the way?
Oh, it's kind of, it's a tricky question. It's because the reasons changed. At the very beginning, it was almost like a practical joke made on me by my husband, who was pulling my leg every time we went shopping. He was not a vegetarian at all. He was a big meat lover, and we were, you know, I'm Polish by origin, so I grew up eating tons of meat and sausages and, you know, not a lot of meat. And he's Polish as well. But we lived in Alberta, so quite close to your Montana, it's also, you know, a very beef country, and there were just all these cows, you know, being transported to slaughterhouses all the time. We saw that a lot, and I don't know why he just started pulling my leg whenever we went shopping for meat, you know, like, look at those baby cows, you know, like, just kind of a joke. And at some point, I said, okay, you got it, I'm not eating meat anymore, you know, and so...
So you started with the premise that eating meat is harmful to animals, cruel to animals. I mean, that's kind of where
I felt uncomfortable. Yeah, like him pointing out, you know, this whole time, you know, look at this, you know, it just somehow made me stop eating red meat. I ate chicken at the very beginning still, but at some point I just lost taste for it. And later on, you know, it was only later as I started reading all the books and kind of connecting the dots and seeing, you know, that this is better for my health and definitely for the environment as well. And it made perfect sense.
Well, okay, so you have an incredible story here, and that takes us back well, 65 million years, right? Of eating meat. So we're going to take a quick break for our commercial sponsors. But when we come back, I would like to have you take us back way, 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 way back when critters started eating critters. And take us all the way up. So we have a lot of turf to cover, maybe 65 million years of eating meat, with Marta Zaraska, who is the author of Meat Hooked, The History and Science of Our 2.5 Million Year Obsession with Meat. What about you out there? Are you as hooked on eating meat as I, or have you been liberated as those surrounding me are today? I am truly surrounded by vegetarians or people who do not eat meat, and I'm asking them, should I quit? And should you quit? What do you think? 831-479-1080, right back.
Get this. You can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
You can be old or young.
Rich or poor.
Married or single.
You can own land outright.
Or lease it year to year.
You can grow small fruits on prairie bench lands.
House plants in coastal valleys.
Flowers on steep wooded hillsides.
Vegetables in the city green belts.
And ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
Get all the help you need to get growing at MetroFarm.com.
Get the complete guide to growing high-value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
Get experts to look at your land and assess which crops to grow at MetroFarm.com.
Get advice on how to plan and develop your project at MetroFarm.com.
And get news about the business of farming for the city.
Yes, you can earn a 5-, 6-, or even a 7-figure income by farming high-value specialty crops on a small parcel of land in or near the city.
Grow for the money today at MetroFarm.com. That's MetroFarm.com.
Welcome back out there. Michael Olson, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Hey, what do you think? Should we, the people, stop eating meat? That's the subject we have on the table today for this edition of What's Eating What Radio. And we have Marta Zaraska, author of Meat Hook, The History and Science of Our 2.5 Million Year Obsession with Meat. Wow, 2.5 million years, but it even goes back much farther than that. 65 million years ago, there were cheating bacteria, right, Marta?
Even longer than that, it goes to 1.5 billion years ago, actually, when the first bacteria on Earth started eating other bacteria in something that resembled meat eating, because we cannot really say it was meat eating because these were not animals, and we generally define meat as flesh of animals. So, but they were definitely eating each other, and many scientists say that this actually started the whole process of evolution and species explosion on Earth, you know, because the eating of each other, because if you have one predator that is trying to eat another creature at prey, then it's a kind of an arms race, because the prey obviously doesn't want to get eaten, so the prey will start, for example, getting some hard shells or growing, because if you were bigger, then it's harder to get eaten. And on the other hand, the predator also starts growing because he wants to eat the prey. So, you know, so everybody was starting to, you know, to arm themselves as much as they could, and everybody started growing and become, you know, all these shells and all these possible ways of protecting yourself or eating others, like teeth and so on, and being faster and having better eyes and so on. It all started and basically went on because creatures, you know, first creatures, bacteria, and then animals were eating each other.
So it was really the competition between predator and prey that led to the evolution of life on Earth. Is that what the thesis is?
Well, definitely. You know, you can say that in a way, you know, meat eating was really what drove the evolution in a way, right? So because the other animals wanted the meat and they wanted to eat it, and the meat animals were trying to protect themselves. This was driving the evolution. So meat eating was driving evolution in a way.
Is there something that isn't either predator or prey any form of life that is not either predator or prey?
No, of course, you know, not everybody eats animals. There are herbivores, for example, right? The animals that don't eat other animals, because only those
but
are.
But they do eat other plants. They eat other forms of life, right?
Yes, but this is not meat. You know, meat is only the flesh of other animals.
Right.
So, plants they also of course protect themselves from being eaten, but it's not. It's a little bit different, right?
Yeah, I know, but I was just scratching my head over a puzzle that I've wondered about for a long time. It seems like to live a life, one must take a life. One must take a life. You know, to everything that's living eats something that was living.
No, of course, in a way, not every creature. There are creatures, you know, that survive on nitrogen, for example, right? Some bacteria and so on. But yes, we animals have to eat generally something that has life in it. But there is a huge, you know, the huge difference between eating an animal and eating a plant, and
sure.
That's the central nervous system. So, you know, plants do not have central nervous system, so they basically cannot feel in the same way that animals can. And, you know, the argument, of course, goes, when does it end? So there are even some vegans that say that eating oysters, for example, is fine. It's fine. It, this kind of movement even has some name. I keep forgetting it. But basically they think that oysters do not have any nervous system, which basically means that they are more similar to plants.
So because they do not have a central nervous sense system, does that mean they are not sentient?
Yeah, most likely, right? So we don't exactly, it's very hard to define what does it mean to, you know, exactly to be sentient, you know, how, what does it mean to know you exist? And these are very, very difficult questions, but it's very, very unlikely that they can feel anything the same way that we can or that cows can. You know, we definitely know that cows can, right?
That
pigs can. They have central nervous system very similar to ours, and we know that they have very, you know, emotions and feelings and perceived pain and suffering in very similar way to ours. But on the other hand, you know, with oysters already, it's quite unlikely that they do. It's very unlikely. So, of course, we cannot be certain about it. But that's, you know, that's why some vegans say it's okay and some say it's don't.
Fair enough.
That's the question of drawing the line.
Sure. Always drawing the line. Well, let's take us back to when we people started eating meat. Why did we start eating meat? Why weren't we satisfied with our vegetarian ways?
So there was one thing. So for many, many millions of years, my ancestors were basically vegan, and they were eating things like fruits, which sounds normal nowadays, but they also ate things, for example, like tree bark. So that's a food, you know.
Tree bark?
Tree bark, yes. They had very, very big teeth, and they're actually able to digest it. And actually, their digestive systems were so different from ours nowadays that if they ate as much meat as a modern American eats, they would most likely die because they wouldn't be able to digest it. And so it could have caused horrible gastrointestinal pain and suffering and diarrhea, vomiting, and so on. And they just couldn't deal with it.
So they didn't have the intestinal enzymes and things needed to break down the meat, so they could not have eaten the meat to the degree we eat meat now.
Yes, they could have eaten a little bit, but if they ate as much as a modern American eats, they would probably have ended badly for them. So what happened basically was that about this 2.5 million years ago in Africa, the climate has changed, and the food that our ancestors were relying on before became less abundant. So our ancestors, and generally, you know, humans, you can say, because they're not exactly the same as we are nowadays, but generally we are a species or we are creatures, animals, so that we adjust very easily and we change very easily, and you know, when things change, and this is what happened back then as well, the climate changed, so they changed and they adapted their diet, and instead of going for the fruits and grasses and so on that became less abundant, they went for something that became suddenly more abundant, and this something was meat, because of the climate change, there were more grazing animals at the time in
Africa. More herbivores, more grass equal more herbivores, and so more herbivores equal, yeah, there you go. So people being very adaptable, we always follow our hunger, right, like, as we do today.
I would say actually that nowadays we are, it's not exactly about hunger, it's about what is good for the survival of our species.
Right.
And that's why, you know, I think that nowadays we have lost track a little bit of that, what's the best for our species part. And back then, best for our species or our ancestors, it was not the same species yet, but for our ancestors, what was best then was to go for meat, because you know, the food that they had available were very different from what we have now. You know, nowadays we live in abundance. We have all the beans and vegetables and fruits and everything you can imagine. You know, even in the rural France, you know, I have unbelievable access to vegetarian foods.
Right.
And 2.5 million years ago in African savanna, the foods were, you know, there was very little to choose from. And especially if you wanted something that would be calorie dense with nutrients and vitamins the way the meat is, there was really nothing else to compete with it. So going for meat was a very good decision for our ancestors, and it allowed them to get bigger brains, because human brains require a lot of energy and very very high quality diet, and that was what meat was back then to them.
Well, we're going to have to take a quick break right now, but when we come back, I want to pick up that point exactly. If it was so good for our ancestors, why is it not good for us? Also, got to go to the phones. 831-479-1080 is the phone. We have Nikki waiting, who is a vegetarian and who may have an interesting comment for us. So lots of treats in store. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, Marta Zaraska, and you. 831-479-1080. Should we stop eating meat? Welcome back. Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, Marta Zaraska, author of Meat Hooked, the history and science of our 2.5 million year obsession with meat. 2.5 million years ago, we started eating meat because it was good for us. It gave us the energy to grow big brains and stand tall and outcompete other critters. So the question is, we're going to work with now, is why, if it was so good for us then, is it not good for us now? But before we do, I promised the phones, and we're going to go to the phone lines, 831-479-1080. Here is Nikki. Nikki, are you there?
Can you hear me?
I got you. Go ahead.
Oh, there you go. Okay, I took you off speaker. I wanted to say, you know, we're talking about, you said you lived in Montana, and the other lady in Ireland saying she lives out in the countryside, and it's just too hard to be a vegetarian, or it's difficult. Why? That's where all the vegetables are grown, out in the beautiful countryside, where you've got plenty of room to grow everything.
Mm-hmm.
So why do I hear that in the countryside it's harder to be a vegetarian than the city? That makes no sense. This is where you grow things, and including herbs and all kinds of other things to season your food with. The only thing I would think that you would need to go into the stores for is to buy salt or something like that, and your supplies. But there are frozen food alternatives also that you can go when you go into town. You've got your Morningstar products, where you've got bacon, sausage patties. None of these have meat. Okay, and breaded chicken patties, all the stuff. You can make bacon, barbecue bacon chicken sandwiches, and all kinds of stuff.
I'm hungry, Nikki.
I get very creative. When I have my animal rights group, we used to put on...
Wait a minute. What did you just say, Nikki? Did you say something about animal rights group?
Yeah, when I had my animal rights group at my college, I took a national work for all the work I did. We put on sales to raise money because I was trying to buy alternatives using animals in the biology departments. Also, we offered to buy them cadavers as well. And we would do fundraisers. We would do Rock Against Fur concerts.
So that
we would have all kinds of vendors. And I would make stuff, and all my members would make stuff. I would double up everything they made. So I was up half the night. But we would sell out every single time.
Nikki, that would indicate to me that perhaps one of the reasons you are a vegetarian is that you think eating meat is cruel to animals. Would that be a fair assumption?
I know it is. I have films with them being slammed against the wall, skinned alive, crying out, being left bleeding, kicked, spit on while they've got their throat half cut. I've been inside the research labs looking for my dog. I didn't take a National Leadership Award in Washington for nothing. I was very highly involved, and I've seen it firsthand. And I've gone up against the researchers, and I've gone up against these people, and I have done a great deal to help the college campus that I was on. Also started a vegetarian meal program in the cafeteria.
Well, Nikki, let me ask you a quick question before we go back to Marta. Do you think I should quit eating meat?
Okay. That's a loaded question that you're asking me. If you have health issues, then you need to consult a nutritionist about how to get the proper amounts of protein. And you can get it without eating meat. And you can also avoid all the hormones that way.
Would the answer to your question be yes, Michael Olson, you should quit eating meat?
I said it the way I said it.
Okay,
because you're asking it as a loaded question. I'm not going to be led that way. I'm too smart for that, dude. I've been through this for too many years.
Well, Nikki, you're one smart cookie, and I'm so grateful that you called us today.
All right. Well, you know, and if anybody ever needs to find out how to get recipes, all they got to do is go online. They can Google. And you don't have to go with couscous. You don't have to go into some wild Middle Eastern diet. You can do it with the things that you normally eat, even Thanksgiving foods, even Christmas foods.
Thank you very much for the call, Nikki. Really appreciate it today. I'm going to like to go backward to Marta, though, and pick up the notion that, well, we started eating meat 2.5 million years ago because it was good for us. And then what happened to today that it's no longer good for us, Marta?
Yeah, so basically our priorities changed, you know, what we want from life has changed. So when you think about our ancestors 2.5 million years ago, they wanted to survive, you know, and reproduce. They wanted to have children and, you know, basically, you know, the species wanted to survive, our selfish genes, right? And nowadays we want to live long. We want to live to be, you know, at least 80 or 90 and have a nice retirement. Our priority in life is not just to have children and then die. And basically this was what meat was good for our ancestors. You know, they lived very, very short. They, you know, the average lifespan was 35 years. So basically meaning I would be dead most likely. For the selfish, meat was good for their genes to survive and for the species to survive, but they didn't have to worry about things like cancer, for example, or heart disease, because these are the problems that start on later in life. You know, not that many people get cancer in their early 30s or heart disease in their early 30s or even in their 20s, right? So these are the diseases of older age, the age that they usually did not live to. So that's why, you know, if you want to live long and healthy in modern life, then meat is no longer good for us. We are not only about, you know, having, you know, growing bigger brains, especially, you know, it's not exactly happening anymore, or just passing on the genes. We have other priorities. And also the foods have changed. You know, we have much different choices. They only have, you know, few fruits, some grasses, you know, some leaves, and the meat. They didn't have, you know, chickpeas, you know, quinoa, kale, you know, all the carrots and potatoes and tomatoes and whatever you want, you know, because they didn't have it.
Well, that would have been the situation my poor brother was stuck with, living in Montana. Being a contractor building houses out in the Montana cold and trying to make it on a diet of toasted cheese sandwiches, poor fella, didn't quite work out too well for him, and as did the relationship with a California blonde. So when that was over, he went right back to meat and did pretty good on that. building houses out in the freezing cold, which leads me to one of my little notions that I picked up along the way somewhere, that I have a latitude theory on diet, and that is that higher the latitude, the more you need meat, and the lower the latitude, the less you need meat. What would you say about something like that, Marta?
It's not about you needing the meat. It's just basically what your body... First of all, the reason why people in the north ate much more meat is because there was not much else growing once again. So they had, again, less choice. So, for example, in our ancestors in the frozen, you know, Europe hundreds of thousands of years ago, there were not many fatty foods, especially in the winter. So if you wanted fat and fat meant calories, you know, this is something you absolutely had need, you had to go for meat. There was just no other choice. But it's not that our bodies in the north somehow, you know, need meat. It's not true at all. It just needs fat. And if there was nothing else, you know, it's true that even nowadays, in some areas of the planet, some people must eat meat because basically they do not have other choice.
Right.
They do not have whole foods, you know. They, for example, they can be living somewhere.
Well, I'd like to pick up the subject of fats when we come back from this coming break, because there's been a very big fight over fats. And one of the contentions, of course, with vegetarians is that meats have bad fats. So that's what I'd like to pick up with a science writer. What a great opportunity. 831-479-1080. Should we stop eating meat? Welcome back, folks. Michael Olson here with Marta Zaraska. Is she the author of Meat Hooked, the story of our 2.5 million year obsession with meat? Well, it goes back a long, long way. We've been eating meat for a long, long time, and now we're told we shouldn't eat meat by a lot of people who say it's bad for our bodies, it's cruel to animals, and it is bad for the environment as well. And so we're talking fats before the break, and how we're looking at fats and the fact that animal fats not good for the body. Is that right, Marta?
So it's a little bit more complicated than that. You know, we need fat. Our bodies need fat to live. You know, it's not like you can stop eating fat and you'll be somehow better off. Fat is not evil internet. But what's important is that, you know, there are different types of fat, right? And here lies a huge difference about meat. So the meat that our ancestors ate was a very different meat. And it actually had different types of fat in it, because wild animals, especially in Africa, back then on, you know, on savanna, they were not very fatty, and they were grazers, and the type of fat they had was mostly the good fat. So a lot of omega-3 fatty acids, for example, and very little saturated fat. So a very, very different fat profile than our modern industrially farmed animals have. And the vast majority of meat that Americans are eating, of course, comes from industrial farms. And these animals, because of their very unnatural diets, they have much more of the bad fat in them, so the saturated fat, and very little of the omega-3 fatty acids. So the meat is no longer the same as it used to be.
Okay, good enough. Now, Nikki, our caller, accused me of asking a loaded question, so I may as well, and here it is. Do you trust science, Marta?
Sorry, is this...
it's a good loaded question. And the reason I ask is that just out here this week or the previous week was the result of a study, the Minnesota Coronary Experiment. But this study was taken back in the 60s and 70s with 9,000 different people. And it was a study of fat consumption, of just exactly what we're talking about here, whereas these 9,000 people were divided into two groups. One was a control group, and the other was a group that was fed the heart-healthy Mediterranean diet of vegetable oils. And the study, the statistics from which just came out, indicated that though the heart-healthy diet reduced cholesterol, it increased the mortality rate, which meant that essentially. People were healthier, but were dying quicker. And I just wondered why, two things. This seems to be in direct contravention to everything we've been told about eating meat and the fats that they contain. But it also, I scratch my head and wonder why the study was, the statistics from that study were smothered for nearly half a century.
Or maybe the question is, why have they been rediscovered, you know? So there are many things. First of all, you know, I haven't read the study itself, so I cannot really comment on it, because I would have to say, I would have to check what they controlled for and what they haven't controlled
right,
for.
Right, right. There's all kinds of things
to really cannot, exactly. So I cannot comment on that. But you have to be very careful, especially when it comes to meat eating, is that, unfortunately, very often, okay, maybe not very often, but often, studies are sponsored by the meat industry. So if you see, for example, a study saying that meat eating is good for you, it's a very good idea to scroll down to see in the paper, you know, has it been, you know, supported by a grant, for example, from the... Yes, and sometimes it's actually very obscure. For example, once there was a study done on a very small group of teenagers as well, and the study basically showed that they had some nutrient deficiencies. And it was sponsored by some Swedish Foundation of Science. Sounded very, you know, scientific. But when you actually went to the foundation's website, you discovered that it's sponsored by the Swedish meat industry, you know, McDonald's and all the other meat producers and so on. So, and this study was very often used by the industry, by the public relations, to show that meat eating is, the meat to eat meat, because otherwise you have nutrient deficiencies.
Is that something you do, Marta, as a science writer? Is that something you always take into consideration, the money, where the money comes from when you look at a study?
Yes, that's extremely important. You know, like there are, you know, of course, if you have studies, for example, showing, I don't know, you have to ask yourself a question. Is any powerful, you know, rich group interested in having the results come out that the way they do, right? For example, if you have a study showing that smoking tobacco is bad for you, it's very unlikely that anybody sponsored it, right? Because who would have a very big interest in showing that you have cancer for smoking? Who, you know, the cancer industry, you know, it's like there's no powerful group behind it, right? But if there is a study showing that smoking is, you know, is not bad for you, then obviously the first question is, has it been by any chance it's connected to the tobacco industry, right?
Right.
And the same thing happens with meat. You know, there is no powerful vegetable industry. You know, the vegetable food, there are lots of little producers, you know, the chickpeas against cucumbers, against, you know, potatoes against tomatoes. There really isn't this powerful united industry like there is with meat. So they don't really sponsor studies. Sometimes, very rarely, but like, or the citrus
sometimes. So if one were to take this Minnesota coronary experiment seriously, one should go back and say, where'd the money come from to do this study?
Yes, first you have to check, you know, make sure that no money was involved, you know, and it's extremely sad, you know, that scientific journals still publish studies that have, you know, this kind of money involved, and, for example, some...
Okay, you got to hold that. We have to take a quick break. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, Marta Zaraska, right back to wrap. Welcome back. So little time left and so much to talk about. Michael Olson with Marta Zaraska, author, Meat Hook, the history and science of our 2.5 million year obsession with meat. Marta, our guest last week, was a farmer named Joel Salatin at the Polyface Farm in the Shenandoah River Valley of Virginia. Joel features himself the lunatic of agriculture because he raises animals in a way that industrial agriculture would call crazy. But in doing so, he seems to address all of the objections that vegetarians have against eating meat, which is the meat is harmful to our body, and the way Joel raises his animals on grass seems to put out a pretty good product with respect to meat. It's certainly less cruel to the animals, and having seen his animals, they are obviously happy. They're smiling animals. Though Joel takes their lives, they do live a good life. And And if they weren't there on Joel's farm, they would have no life at all. And finally, because of the way he raises his animals, it regenerates the environment. And his environment of his farm is something truly to behold. So I wonder if there was a different way of raising meat than the industrial model, would it be okay to eat meat then?
It's better, but I would still not say it's good for us. But the main reason is that, first of all, it's just not sustainable in a way. There is no way we can raise enough meat, even anywhere close to how much people want meat, you know, in that way, you know, in the small farms, kind of, you know, happy-ish animals. It's just not possible.
But he says it is. Joel says it is. No, if it were possible, would it be okay to eat meat?
No, it's not. It's not possible because you just do calculations on you know how much land we need to graze all these animals, and it's impossible because we would run out of our planet. We would need another Earth to do that. It's just not doable. That's one thing. Second thing, they still, from the environmental perspective, which for me is the strongest argument against eating meat, there is no difference. And actually, some studies show that it's even worse because this kind of animals who gradually produce more methane, which is the very powerful climate change greenhouse gas. So there is no difference from this perspective. And when it comes to your health, of course, it is a little better because of the hormones and so on. But, for example, the studies that connect meat eating to cancer, one of the reasons there may be a connection is, for example, the heme iron in meat. And this is something that is every meat. So it doesn't, or animal protein as well. So there is no, it doesn't matter if the animal lived a happy life or it was a roadkill or anything. It still contains those nutrients. So there is no difference from this perspective. It is better if you want to be, you know, feel better on your conscience about the life that animals are living, and a little better from your health perspective, but it's not better from the perspective of climate change and environment.
Well, then there seems to be no doubt about how you're going to answer this question. Should I stop eating meat?
Yes, I'm going to say yes, and the reason for it is, for me, it's environmental, and I'm a mother. I have a small 4-year-old daughter, and since I became a mother, I really started worrying about the world is going to look like in several decades from now, and we know that meat is extremely important.
Actually. Okay, we're just out of time, Marta, but thank you so much for joining us from Dublin, Ireland. Marta Zaraska, author, Meat Hooked. Thank you so much. And thank you all out there.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.